Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we're talking about the old school versus the new school cannabis industry. We are joined by film director Tony Germanario and Olympic gold medalist Ross Rabagliati. Guys, thank you for being here with us this evening.
Thanks for having us.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure, and I know you guys are on the road to getting a film produced, a comedy, if you will. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about your two respective backgrounds.
Sure. I'll go first. This is Tony. So I've actually been kind of in the software industry for a very long time, but as you can imagine, it's not the most fulfilling job sometimes. And I've always had a creative side. So in my earlier, younger days, I was actually a musician. I played in a touring band for about 10 years. And once I got married and had kids, I shifted to a more film-focused background. So I started writing scripts, and I've actually written and directed two feature films to date, and I've written a couple of other projects as well. But the two features I have out are Bad Frank and The Price for Silence. But I wanted to go in a little bit different direction, as the first two films were more, I guess, thriller-based or drama-based. And you know, I wanted to go back to the things that I really liked when I was a kid, you know, watching movies like Better Off Dead and Hot Dog and things like that. And that's really where the genesis of the idea for this new film, Chairlift, came from. Hey, Ross?
Yeah. I'm... Glad to be here. I was at the 1998 Olympics 22 years ago and tested positive for THC after I took the gold in the giant slalom. And ever since then, I've been standing up for cannabis users and explaining to the media and to who is interested on, you know, why athletes would choose to use cannabis and how it can be part of a healthy lifestyle. And it's been an odyssey to go through prohibition and to see in Canada here, federal legalization in the last couple of years. So it was a 20-year endeavor for me to kind of stick my neck out on the chopping block there for everybody else and carry the cannabis torch, as they say. So yeah, I'm definitely, you know, part of sort of the genesis of, you know, coming out of prohibition and seeing, you know, a legalized framework here in Canada. So super excited to be part of this project. And yeah, I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, it was real interesting the way we actually connected is, you know, we spent, I guess when we first started, once the script was done, we went out to Denver and actually met with a couple of folks. One of the gentlemen, Eric McKee, actually, Bob, I think you might know Eric. He came on board as just someone we got introduced to. Really great guy, very heavily involved in both the cannabis and hemp industries. And he actually reached out to Ross directly, and we just were able to get on the phone with Ross, and we just hit it off. He's kind of like our kind of people, so to speak. And really thought there was some good synergy in regards to how we're thinking about the project, what sort of things we want to do. And I was actually really disappointed when I couldn't get up to Vancouver to spend 420 with him and some of his team up there. But, you know, it's all good. We'll get up there next time, and, you know, hopefully it'll be around filming.
Certainly. Well, and, you know, it's just such a joy to have you guys on the podcast. Love to talk about this film, Chairlift. It takes place, my understanding is, here in Colorado, at least to some degree, and it hits on this theme of how is the old school cannabis industry, the cannabis industry that was started here in Colorado through the medical marijuana years into 2012 and up to the present day, how that is intersecting with the new school cannabis industry. Big money, big players entering the space. It seems like you guys are having a lot of fun in this script and in this film tackling this idea. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, for sure. It actually goes back a lot further than that. So the premise of the film is about a 20-something guy who just graduates from college. And his grandparents, who were hippies in the 60s, actually took care of him and raised him. And they were able to put him through a very expensive college because they used to sell weed when they were younger. And, in the 60s and 70s, they put all their money away and they had a great list of customers. And they just lived the lifestyle that they were happy with. And the grandson, the reason why he was being raised by his grandparents, where his parents were actually, they actually died in a skiing accident. It's not your typical skiing accident. They, because they were, they're having sex on a chairlift and fell off and died. And that's how, the parents wound up, having to leave him with the grandparents. And because of that, he just feels like he doesn't want anything to do with that lifestyle anymore. So that's why he's on the East Coast, and he wanted to go to this prestigious venture capital firm that he was going to be working with. But when that company gets hit with SEC violations on his first day of work, he actually loses his license and he has to return home to Colorado. And what happens is his grandparents are losing their house because all the customers that they've had over the years have gone away because they've all gone to the legal dispensaries that are now out there. And their big nemesis in the film used to actually work for them, but he was someone who never partakes. He was just only in it for the business side. And now he's become kind of the mogul in the in this fake company that we've developed. But he doesn't do anything. Like you say, he's big business. He's a pseudo big tobacco type person who really is only after for the business. So he's kind of this new school thinking that wants nothing to do with, really the lifestyle and the things that cannabis really is known for, the joy that it brings and the capabilities that it has from a medicinal perspective as well. So it's kind of those two factions are butting heads throughout the entire film and how they're actually both going in search of this elusive and made up Bob Marley pot brownie recipe.
Well, it sounds fantastic. It's a great concept, and definitely looking forward to it. But the topic of old school versus new school, OGs in the industry, et cetera, I'd like to dive into that a little bit, just based on your observations, because it is something that we see, in practicality every single day, both in the marijuana, the cannabis part of the industry, the industrial hemp or the CBD side of the industry. There are OG folks on both sides, and it's created a bit of a divide. And to your point about, whether the decision and the impetus to build a business is because of financial gain or to sort of advance, policy, whatever the case might be, from a more activism bent, what happens when a movement becomes an industry? This is where the clash begins. But when did you start noticing that there was this sort of divide? And was that the inspiration for the film?
It actually wasn't the inspiration for the film, but once I started really investigating it more, that's when I really started seeing it, right? You notice, because actually I spent quite a bit of time out in Denver, right, and meeting with a bunch of people that were in the industry, and that's where I really started to see it. The people that were really invested in the process and just in the way that they go about their business is totally different than, this kind of new school mentality, which a lot of people just trying to jump on the bandwagon, trying to make a buck, right? They understand the laws are changing and they're just trying to take advantage of the laws, as opposed to some other people out there that are just, tremendous people thinking about the lifestyle itself. And yeah, there's money to be made, absolutely, but that's not really the impetus behind what they're doing, right? It's more about bringing a lifestyle change that they can affect on the greater good. So, that's really what I started seeing it a couple of years ago. And that's really as the film started to progress, once we started seeing that. And because at one point I wasn't really sure exactly where I wanted the conflict to be. And, the more I dealt with people, the more people that I met, that became pretty easy to actually figure that out.
Well, it's interesting because you see the old school versus the new school more than ever in the developing California market with the new regulations and regulatory structures. So it's sort of personified in a daily basis, but it is something that we see. You see folks that resent current industry operators that don't like what the industry or the so-called industry has become, that this was never their intention, and so forth and so on, and all legitimate feelings and a demonstrated, you know, request for sort of attention or recognition for that. And it creates this strange divide that doesn't need to exist. But I could see how it makes for an interesting topic. But it is something that you see every single day in this industry. And it's just interesting. I mean, Eric, you've seen it on the hemp side when you deal with folks over at IHS and you talk about how these folks view the industry as this and, you know, it's becoming this. And there's that divide. There's that transition. How do you see that distinction between old school and new school playing out?
Well, you know, you touched on this point, Tony, about the subculture around cannabis dating back into the 60s and the 70s. I think about growing up and watching all of these iconic films, you know, Dazed and Confused, for example, that really set the tone for my perspective on cannabis. And I think, you know, that's what the movie you guys are trying to make is addressing, is this shifting perception. I'd really like to hear from Ross, you know, here you were back in the late 90s and you were penalized for using cannabis. And of course that was revoked, but you've now seen this develop over 20, 22 years and this entire cultural shift in the perception of how cannabis is perceived. Talk a little bit about that and, you know, what your interest was for coming into this movie and wanting to see this film be made. Why is it so timely right now?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, cannabis was one of those things that we fought for to see legalization in Canada, not only at a, you know, provincial or state level, like in the States, but at a federal level. And it reflected kind of the, you know, honestly, it reflected the surge in popularity in snowboarding back in the day where, you know, we knew if we could get to the Olympics that it would really take off, but then what's it going to turn into? And are we really going to keep like the true character and the true essence of snowboarding intact? And I think, you know, I saw that same potential happen and did happen with cannabis here in Canada. Same way, we wanted it to become legal at a federal level, but what is that going to entail? And of course, you know, the government never gets it perfect on the first go around. And so there's been a lot of people sort of left out of the opportunity. Like you say, like the mom and pop shops and the, you know, family gardens and things like that have been left out. So it's a double-edged sword, but I think in the end, if you persevere, the, you know, the peak and the whole wave of corporate weed will play itself out. And I think at the end of the day, people want, you know, brands that they care about, brands that they resonate with, and high quality craft cannabis, high quality right across the board. And, you know, I think, you know, with our model here, we have a new license that's craft, small batch, 2,000 square feet max, and destined for dispensaries that you can have relationships with and so forth. So you can, you know, make sure that your branded cannabis is going to, you know, the stores that you have the licensing deals with. And it's so, you know, and my interest obviously in being a part of the show, Chairlift, is, you know, clearly to, you know, be a part of what I would consider, you know, the next big social revolution, you know, in North America for sure, and in Europe, with regards to natural medicine, renewable resources, the products that, you know, are derived from cannabis and cannabis extracts with regards to health and whatnot. So, you know, to be able to put it out there, you know, and have the opportunity, and with the platform, you know, with, you know, all these great actors that are potentially going to be part of this this project, I think, you know, is really the icing on the cake as far as what I've been up to.
No, absolutely. And Ross, you know, when you talk about the subculture of snowboarding and how it intersects with cannabis, I can't help but think about the safety meeting and the role that that has when you're on the mountain. But Bob, I want to put this to you because you've been at the forefront of this here in Colorado for at least the last 10 years. You have seen firsthand the ma and pa dispensary model. You've seen the small businesses and you've seen this influx of cash and capital and the big players coming in. And I don't know, maybe there's a story that comes to mind or something specifically that you can share with us that just highlights that transition from the OGs to whatever this is now, the big business, the commoditization, whatever you want to call it.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, the marijuana dispensary system, no matter what moves you make, you are somewhat limited by, you know, how much money you can make. So contrary to popular belief, these folks don't just, you know, roll in dough because of 280E in particular, the tax provision that really undercuts the profit line on those businesses, no matter what their scale is. But what we started to see is the aggregation of distressed dispensaries. People went all in this industry during a recession, meaning they went out and they cashed in their 401ks, or they were successful in developing something here, and then they brought money for the Green Rush to Colorado. So it created a unique operator, some opportunistic, some, as you say, mom and pop, where their bread and butter was, you know, delivering high-grade product and or medical-grade products to people. Well, that transition began to change when the regulations became such that you needed to have lawyers, you needed to have accountants, you needed to have your business not only was limited by the 280E restriction, but it also required so much money to be spent on compliance because it was such a rigorous and strictly regulated industry. So you saw the consolidation. That's when things started to take that turn. Now, to your point, I think that these businesses, particularly the distribution outlets, should be more cottage, more mom and pop. And California's done a very good job of attempting to maintain that for the time being, but it's really going to have to work hard and put some regs in place to prevent it from flipping over to the other side. But I got to ask you, Ross, just out of curiosity, if you go back to 1998, you win this gold medal. Awesome, by the way. What goes through your mind when they come back and they say that you've got this negative drug test or this positive drug test and here's the repercussion? How's that play out? What do you go through?
You go into a state of shock, pretty much. You know, you can't bear the weight of your body and you're on your legs. You literally have to sit down. It was a big surprise, actually. Believe it or not, I totally thought I had the whole weed thing like buttoned up. And so, you know, when the coaches came in my room and told everyone to get out and for me to sit down and, you know, that I tested positive, you know, for something, they didn't know what it was at the time, but I knew that the only thing that it could be was cannabis, because that's the only thing that, you know, we thought was on the list of banned substances that we were going to be exposed to potentially. And, you know, of course, you know, my environment, you know, where I was training and living at the time in Whistler was very much part of the cannabis culture. And even though I wasn't using cannabis, I was there passing the joint over, you know, and it never dawned on me for a second that I would test positive for the secondhand smoke of it, even though if you think about it, you know, smokers have been, you know, accused of, you know, workplace safety issues because of secondhand smoke. So when I was on Jay Leno, Jay confided in me that he had a health test for a life insurance policy where he tested positive for tobacco, where he doesn't smoke cigarettes. And so he could totally see where I was coming from with that. So, but it was quite the shock to the system. And for sure, instantly I knew that my life would be different, even though I was already going to be different at that point, because, you know, the Olympic gold medal is a coveted thing. And then being the first time snowboarding was at the Olympics, and, you know, the first event of the Olympics, no less. And so that whole bit of it was already kind of overwhelming, just to be there and to win. And now to, you know, be a part of a international controversy over Schedule One substance. You know, I'm still not allowed into the States, you know, to this day. So I've got a lawyer that has me all papered up with advanced parole, which does allow me through. But yeah, it's not without a fair amount of effort. But, you know, my mom's in California in the winters and in Palm Springs. So, you know, it was definitely, it curbed my activities, let's put it that way.
Well, and Ross,
that's part of the reason why he wanted to be part of the film, too, because we get a really good makeup department, so we're going to figure out how to make him up in different ways and sneak him in.
Oh, I love that. You can comment, in the last 22 years, has the Olympics, have they become a little bit more progressive as it relates to cannabis, or is it still the same as it was 2 decades ago?
No, and to be clear, cannabis wasn't on the list of banned substances when I had my issue at the Olympics, and that's why they gave my medal back to me. And there was, I don't know, they thought it was, or who knows why they didn't know what was on their list of banned substances, but that was the end ruling. And so at the end of the day, they added cannabis to the snowboarding list of banned substances the summer of 98. And since then, they've raised it over 1,000% higher than that initial addition. I don't know why, but probably athletes are being more and more exposed to it as it becomes more socially acceptable, and countries like Canada are legalizing it, and others like Portugal and, you know, several other countries around the world. WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, which also is an association with the Olympics, just took CBD off the list of banned substances. So now athletes can use a great anti-inflammatory CBD, which, you know, super good for anxiety as well. So excellent for athletes and positive. I think it's a matter of time before the IOC and you know, the Olympic Committee takes THC off the list.
Those are all indicative signs that progress is being made for sure at the global level. It's what we talk about a lot here on the Hoban Minute, right, Bob?
Absolutely, Eric. You know, and Ross, thanks for sharing all that. That is just a fascinating story. And man, that's a lot to go through. But I want to ask you, Tony, as a New Jersey native, such as myself, and a resident of the great state, what's going on with cannabis in the Garden State? It is the Garden State, after all. What's going to happen there? What's the word on the street, if you know?
The word on the street is our illustrious governor eventually is going to put it on the ballot. I've heard rumor that within the last couple of weeks, I've heard that it might be finally getting on the ballot in November. It was actually one of the platforms that he ran on was that he was going to legalize. So I think that's why he won the vote, because I don't think he's the most popular governor, but that was certainly a very popular platform to run on. But I think that right now, especially in my opinion, I think with all of the economic challenges that everyone is going through, I think that that can be a way for them to generate some revenue around taxes, right? If they can tax it like they do in some other states, I think there's a way to be able to generate some revenue that they're going to look to. So I really think it's going to get on the ballot. I think it'll easily pass, especially nowadays. It's become so much more socially acceptable that all they have to do is get on the ballot, and I think it'll breeze right through.
We completely agree with you. We just recorded a podcast earlier today on that topic, and how this pandemic makes federal cannabis legalization more attractive. I do want to raise one point before we go. I guess 2 points. The first is I really do like the metaphor, if you will, of this Bob Marley secret hash brown or edible recipe, not hash brown, because it's symbolic for this industry. All of these businesses, all of these cannabis companies are trying to seek that holy grail, whatever the new thing will be, whatever the next craze will be. And I think it's just a perfect symbolic thing to have in your movie to talk about this industry. But here's my last question for you guys, and maybe it's too soon to tell, but as you look at the music that's going to be in this movie, do you have any Grateful Dead that may be included? What say you?
Well, Grateful Dead might be a little bit out of our budget. However, we have some connections. We have some connections to Widespread Panic and to String Cheese Incident. So we've actually gotten some pretty good inroads with those folks. And one of the guys on our team was just on a big Widespread podcast kind of Facebook party thing the other night. So we're hopeful to get some of that. And, you know, if you have any Grateful Dead fans out there that have a way for us to get some music, yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan from back in the day. I've seen more than my share of shows. So that would be fantastic in some way. But we want to make it very diverse, right? Like Snoop Dogg, we're sniffing around Snoop Dogg to see if we can get something from him too. We want to, you know, anyone who we think could be bring a diverse look at the culture, we're down for that.
Well, you guys are doing awesome work. Go ahead, Ross.
I was going to say, yeah, the music's going to be a key part of it for sure. I mean, that's a great soundtrack. It's always, something that people like. I was a big Dead fan and an even bigger Frank Zappa fan. I just wanted to get that in there.
Well, that is fantastic. I don't know. We try to drop subtle Grateful Dead lines throughout our discussions and conversations. So it's been great. Tony, Ross, you've said it all. Everyone go out and see Chairlift. Take a look at Chairlift. And Eric, drive us home.
Oh, it's awesome to talk to you guys. We absolutely will get with you again post COVID pandemic. I know that this is, like all industries, the film industry is definitely taking a hit right now and is on pause. But it's such a pleasure to bring you guys on and talk about this. It's certainly a different topic than we get to talk about on the Hoban Minute. So really appreciate you guys. Continue the great work. And the soundtrack is essential. Just consider a little Grateful Dead in there if you can. We'll reach out to Bob Weir's people.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.